today on Straight Talk Africa. Tension remains high in Uganda following last week's presidential election, in which long-serving President Yoweri Museveni was declared the winner. The leading opposition candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, quickly rejected the election results, saying it was not a free and fair poll. International observers backed Besigye, saying Uganda's Electoral Commission lacked transparency. An in-depth look at Uganda's controversial presidential election is next on Straight Talk Africa. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios in Washington. It's Wednesday, February 24th. I'm Esther Githui-Ewart. Today, we'll talk about the Ugandan election results as tension remains high following last week's presidential election, in which long-serving President Yoweri Museveni was declared the winner. And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments. And we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Uganda's Electoral Commission declared President Yoweri Museveni as the official winner of the 2016 Ugandan presidential election. But the country's main opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, has rejected Mr. Museveni's victory. VOA's Paul Ndiho has our report.
Uganda's long-time leader, President Yoweri Museveni, won a disputed presidential election last Saturday, cementing his 30-year hold on power in the East African nation. His win comes amid heavy criticism of the voting process by the local and international observers. General Museveni won nearly 61% of the vote, while his main challenger, Kizza Besigye, secured 35%. According to the Ugandan Electoral Commission Chairman, Badru Chigundu.
Bringing more than 50% of the valid votes cast at the election, the Commission declares Yoweri Kaguta Museveni elected President of the Republic of Uganda at the presidential election held on 18th February 2016.
Edward Kukan, a chief observer of the European Union mission, criticized the ballot process and says the election was conducted in an intimidating atmosphere and that the nation's electoral commission is not independent.
According to our assessment, the electoral commission lacks independence, transparency, and the trust of the stakeholders. It narrowly interpreted its mandate by limiting it to the organization of the technical aspects of the elections. Moreover, the Commission lacked transparency in its decision and failed to inform the voters and contestants on key elements of the electoral process in a timely and comprehensive manner.
Observers also questioned the government's motive in deploying security forces throughout the country during and after the elections. The government says that it did so to ensure a peaceful outcome, but some voters dispute that, saying that the government was trying to intimidate them.
Seven has not won. The election has not been fair, free and fair. The election has been, they have brought army here, policemen here. They are trying to threaten people here.
Opposition leader Kizza Besigye, who has been detained multiple times since the election results were announced, has now called on his supporters to protest at the election.
If the regime continues to restrict me, to detain me in my home, illegal as it is, I call upon all of you citizens to protest this. At the very minimum, let us also stop them from moving. Our people should remain firm, should remain strong. This is our country.
The opposition had tried to tap into mounting support among young voters, especially in urban areas where unemployment is high and they are frustrated by the poor state of schools and hospitals. But the ruling National Resistance Movement Party says Museveni's victory shows that the opposition failed to offer any serious alternative governing plan, apart from empty promises. Although President Yoweri Museveni, 71, has presided over a period of strong economic growth, he is accused by critics at home and abroad of repressing dissent through intimidation and failing to tackle rampant corruption in a nation of 37 million people. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. And joining me here in the studio are my distinguished guests, Elizabeth Murray, a senior program officer at the United States Institute of Peace, and Rushdi Nakadin, regional director for Africa at the International Foundation for Electoral Systems. And in our New York studios, we'll be joined by Milton Alimadi, publisher and CEO of Black Star News. Welcome to you all. And Alimadi, let me start with you there in New York. Clearly, the situation... All right, I understand we're not able to hear Alimadi. Rushdi, let me turn to you here in the studio. Clearly, the situation in Uganda is still volatile, and a lot of people are afraid to get out. We understand there's uniformed officers everywhere. What do you make of this, and what is the way forward?
Thank you, Esther, and thank you for having me. I think the situation in Uganda is clearly escalating. The longer opposition leaders are held under house arrest, the more people will feel agitated, and the fact that their rights would not have been recognized, the fact that the opposition leader is wanting to lay a petition, this all just aggravates the entire situation.
And Elizabeth, coming to you also, I know that the U.S. Institute of Peace had a kind of training for the youth in Uganda where you wanted more peace. You wanted people to go out there and vote and know that there will be some conflicts, but it doesn't necessarily mean chaos. But what we see now is a lot of tension. We see a lot of chaos. Mm-hmm. We see the leader of the opposition, Kizza Besigye, under house arrest more than 8 times now, on and off. What is the way forward in terms of peace for Uganda?
That's a great question. Certainly, the youth of Uganda and Ugandan citizens more broadly should be commended for their many important acts of peace in the lead up to the election. I think that the regime, in terms of peace moving forward, the National Resistance Movement, the ruling party, faces a number of challenges. Ugandans are really frustrated with corruption in the ruling regime. They're frustrated with unemployment, particularly youth. We have a country of more than 75% of people under age 30, and the majority of them are unemployed. There's also very, very deep polarization between the ruling parties, which we've seen has led to violence and repression in the past several weeks. So I think the NRM and President Museveni are going to, they may have some struggles to their legitimacy in the coming months and years as citizens are frustrated with the increasing repression.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn to Milton in New York. Milton, certainly the situation is volatile as we've seen, and the leader of the opposition, Dr. Kizza Besigye, is calling for protests if he continues being under house arrest. Do you think this is a wise move, or is this a recipe for more disaster?
Well, first of all, it's even questionable whether he is the leader of the opposition or he's actually the president-elect. And I think that's what needs to be determined first, because the numbers that were being shown from the tallying stations did not match with the numbers that were ultimately released by Badru Kigundu, whom he appointed personally to be the electoral commissioner. And that's why the EU has said that he lacks competency, and that's what it really meant. So we really don't know who won these elections. I think the so-called leader of the opposition, who may actually be president-elect, has as much right as the dictator Museveni to declare himself president, in which case we would then have an audit. Let's have an audit of all the ballots, and let's determine who really won these elections. But the good thing is that the so-called election has been universally condemned and seen as not credible by people and organizations that were actually invited by General Museveni himself to observe the elections. The Commonwealth, the EU, and Ugandan election monitors all have concluded that these were not free and fair elections at all. Intimidation, violence, the abuse of state resources by the government. In fact, the Commonwealth said the state is fused together with candidate Museveni. So there was no distinction between whom Dr. Besigye was running against. Was he running against General Museveni, or was he running against the state establishment? So that's why it's fraudulent to refer to these as elections. I call them as non-elections. And then what did Mr. Museveni do when he was not sure that he would be able to sustain this fraudulent election? He has now deployed the army in the streets. And there's a word for that. It's called a coup d'etat.
All right, Ali Mahdi, let me get back to you shortly. Let me get the thoughts of our guest here in the studio. Definitely we'll continue that conversation. Elizabeth, if you look at the Electoral Commission, we've seen a lot of kind of social media backlash. So many people, as Ali Mahdi says, people are not happy with the Electoral Commission. They feel that they did not tally the votes in about 1,700 polling stations that were actually supposed to be the stronghold of the opposition. What challenges do you think the Electoral Commission was facing? Do you think there was pressure from the incumbent? Yeah. Or what exactly have you heard from the ground?
Indeed, there is not a lot of trust in the Electoral Commission right now. I think that Ugandans had low trust in the Electoral Commission to start, and this has been deteriorating over the past week. I believe that even those who support Museveni would acknowledge that there are defects within the Electoral Commission. It's thought to be politicized, and there were some clear deficiencies around the election time, including the delay of the delivery of materials to many polling stations, particularly in Kampala and Wasiko, which are known to be opposition strongholds. We heard reports of voters having to wait up to 6 or 7 hours and polling having to be postponed till the following day in some places. I also think that the tallying of the votes has not been particularly transparent. In fact, it's been rather opaque. And so to regain confidence, the Electoral Commission would really have to address these serious deficiencies.
And Rushdie, if I turn to you, obviously, one of the things coming out clearly about Uganda is that nobody's jubilating about Museveni's victory. I don't know. I'm not being critical here. I'm just, this is what I've noticed. I've seen a lot of people out protesting. I've seen a lot of military people coming out on the social media. We've seen pictures of people, you know, kind of afraid to even step out. And that's what is coming out of Kampala. I don't know if I'm reading this right. Have you seen anybody out there celebrating the victory?
You're quite correct in that, Esther. I think that there's been, in fact, Ugandan citizens need to be acknowledged for the fact that they have not turned violent in terms of the protest action that they have been taking and that they've been restricting themselves to social media and other kind of mechanisms. But even in your own country, we've seen after the President Kenyatta commended President Museveni, there was a backlash by his own citizens in the region, in Kenya, against the announcement.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a backlash in the social media like we've not seen in Kenya in a long, long time. But let me turn to you again, Milton, there in New York. And yes, if I understand correctly, and correct me here, that the Electoral Commission is given about 48 hours within which to announce the winner. Is there a recourse for this in case there are some problems, especially now that we're talking about some polling stations not having their votes tallied?
Right.
Would that have been an exception, at least wait for a little bit to be able to get the votes counted and then tally them?
Well, yes, I think you raise a good question, Esther, but that would presume that we were working with an independent Electoral Commission. And that was not the case. When I was on the same show in November, I called that out. I said it's going to be almost impossible for Mr. Kigundu to announce a so-called winner who is different than General Museveni. And that's been the problem. You raise a very good point. That's what a competent Electoral Commission would have done. But since Mr. Badru Kigundu is not independent of General Museveni, we would not have expected him to do that, because I am quite sure that there's some risk involved to his personal safety. So I wouldn't expect him to do something like that. But that would have been the right thing for him to do. But nevertheless, there's an opportunity to correct this sham. Those ballots are there. We had that situation in Afghanistan where the UN became involved And they had an audit. They ought to do the same thing in Uganda. They should allow the votes of Ugandans who actually cast their ballots to be counted so that we know who is the rightful winner of these elections.
Milton, we'll get back to you shortly. Let me take a break. And we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website, Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Uganda Elections. And we're still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
And welcome back. I'm Esther Gidu Ewart, sitting in for Shaka Sali. Before the break, we were talking about the 48 hours given to the Electoral Commission, definitely to announce the winner. And Milton was talking about how flawed this Electoral Commission has been. But turning to you here, Rushdie, and we're going to continue on that definitely. Rushdie, turning to you here in the studio, when you look at Uganda, Museveni has been credited with about 28 years of stability. We know the history of Uganda. It was something that you would not want a repeat of in the East African region. But so what next for the stability of the so-called the Pearl of Africa?
I think that there's still a lot that could be done. We're seeing a big backlash from the ground, even though voters went to the polls. I mean, elections are not the be-all and end-all of democracy. Just before the break, Milton spoke about the fact that the Election Commission has been facing a number of different storms, and those storms have not started today. They started several years ago already with their original appointment. Every single one of the elections in 2005 and 2011 have been contested in the courts. And most likely what we're going to be seeing is that there will be another appeal to the courts. What we don't want to be seeing is a situation where the opposition leaders are under house arrest and that the computers of the opposition parties are being confiscated by the police, which complicates a potential petition which needs to be there. There needs to be due course and a respect for those processes to unfold. I mean, today we have local government elections in Uganda. Indications are that turnout is very low, and it's maybe an expression, not just the general sense that people don't pitch up for local government elections, but I think more a protest action against the situation as it currently stands. And I think a revamp or reform of the Election Commission is something which is very important, which needs to be addressed. It's been on the cards for several years in terms of the appointment process, the tenure, the process by which their office can be repealed. So all of those things lay the foundation for the fact that there's a large amount of distrust on the Election Commission. And where we've seen situations where there is a lot of trust in the Election Commissions, people tend to be very forgiving of things like materials arriving late on election day or weaknesses in communications. But within this particular context, because of the lack of trust which is there, arguments that the institution is not independent, that there's a lack of transparency in the decision-making, this all complicates matters and lays the foundation for a call for institutional reform, which will most probably gain more groundswell as the days continue.
And Elizabeth, before I get to Milton, because he's burning with comments about what he is hearing from his native country of Uganda, the use of state machinery. And if you remember, just before the elections, the social media was shut off. Like, people were not able to tweet, they wouldn't go on Facebook. What did that spell anyway, from the word go? That what did we have to expect about this election? The state said this was for security purposes, national security. Mm-hmm. But other people interpret it otherwise.
Absolutely. I think we saw a lot of repression on the part of the state that affected the turnout and the result, the end numbers in the election. There was significant detention of opposition candidates and opposition supporters in the lead up to the election. There was widespread intimidation of journalists. This is well documented by Ugandan organizations and international organizations. And there's legal basis for this repression in Uganda. There is a law called the Public Order Management Act, which was passed in 2013, which significantly limits freedom of assembly in Uganda. And I really agree with Rushdie's point that democracy is not just in the elections. So we should be concerned, the international community, Ugandans, about the impact that this will have on democracy going forward. There's another law, the NGO Act, which has been passed by Parliament but not yet signed into law by Museveni, which would really curtail the ability of NGOs to operate independently. So state machinery has been in use in many ways in the lead-up to this election, and there are many instruments of the state that will continue to impede democracy. As for the social media shutdown, I think that that was somewhat unexpected, maybe not a big surprise, but unexpected. I think what was interesting to note is that Ugandans are tech-savvy and young and well-educated, and many of them managed to bypass this by downloading virtual private networks onto their phones and skirting the restrictions.
Milton, I hear you kind of agreeing with a lot of what is being said here in the studio. Can you weigh in on some of those, especially the use of state machinery prior to the elections and even now?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to also address the whole issue of stability. I think that's a widely spread myth, first of all, because at one point in the northern part of the country, virtually the entire population of 1.2 million people were confined in what is literally concentration camps, people in Acholi region, for almost 15 years. If that is the price of stability, that's not really stability at all, because it's now been estimated that over the 15-year period, perhaps 800,000 to 1 million people died. Those are the untold stories about this so-called stability. And in an autocratic state, there is always stability. We saw it in Egypt. We saw it in Chile under Pinochet. We saw it throughout history. In Germany, under Hitler. Italy, under Benito Mussolini. Those were all stable, quote-unquote, stable countries. So we should not give General Museveni any license in terms of that. And then let me address the issue of the voting itself. There were instances of pre-ticked ballots. How do we count those as votes? There were instances of actually centers where these ballots are being doctored. And Dr. Besigye himself stormed one of these centers. He went with a lawyer and other witnesses. And the police came there, and instead of investigating what was going on in those secret locations, they arrested Dr. Besigye instead. So what we have in Uganda today is paralysis. We have somebody who claims he won, but people don't really believe he won. And we have the so-called opposition leader who may actually be the president-elect. I think this is when the UN can do the same thing that was done in Afghanistan. Let's have an audit and determine who really won these elections so that we can have true stability and democracy in Uganda.
I hear you, Milton, but I'm also wondering whether at this point do we know when President Museveni expects to be sworn in for the fifth term?
I don't think Ugandans are very interested in that, and you raised a very good issue. You said there was no celebration at all, because I think the rigging and the abuse of the process was so blatant that even NRM supporters are embarrassed by this. And personally, as a Ugandan, I would also like to apologize to the rest of the world by the conduct of President Museveni, by his behavior. In the last 1 week, I think his behavior has been quite embarrassing to most Ugandans, regardless of which party they support.
Okay, turning to you, Rushdie, I have not heard much from the other opposition candidates, including former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi and others, because we had 8 candidates in this election, and we haven't heard much about what's going on. All we hear is between the government now and Kizza Besigye. What do you make of that?
It's good that you point that out. I mean, we've had at least in this election one candidate who was a woman as well running for the presidential on the presidential ticket. I think that the contestation between the two main leaders has overshadowed everybody. It could be well that the two people, well-schooled politicians, have planned their campaign quite strategically, and they knew what they were going to be doing going in, whether it was the use or abuse of state resources, or on the other side, a defiance campaign based on resistance. I don't think that the other candidates potentially have got their acts together when it came to the campaigning kind of process. So you see this dominance between these two people going at each other. On the one hand, you're seeing a defiance campaign which is well-groomed and potentially is very sophisticated, and on the other hand, the heavy-handed state repression coming in with the shutting down of social media, house arrests, not allowing the campaigning to actually take place. I mean, prior to the election, you also saw this deployment of these crime preventers. I mean, it created an entire environment or context of intimidation. And you're kind of seeing on one hand now a situation where it's a question of who's brave enough to stand up and say the things which mean you're speaking truth to power. And at this stage, it's just Besigye. So.
And Elizabeth on this side. Yes, Milton.
But I'd just like to add something to that, too. I think the conduct of the international community is also very important. And I think so far it's been encouraging. The United States Secretary of State, Kerry, came out with a very strong statement raising the questions about the credibility of this election. But that is not sufficient in itself. I think if the United States was willing to push and broker a solution in a place like Afghanistan, I think Uganda also deserves the same kind of attention. I don't think that you can say that the elections were not credible and then continue to conduct business as usual with General Museveni. At the very least, you cannot continue the same type of military relationship that you have with General Museveni. And this goes for the United States and the United Kingdom as well, because these are the two principal countries that support Uganda militarily as well as financially for its budget.
Well, very interesting point. And Elizabeth, I don't want to put you in a fix, but that's one of the questions people are wondering. We've heard on our report here that the UN is also very concerned about what happened in Uganda. The EU obviously said the Electoral Commission lacked transparency. Of course, Secretary Kerry talked about it, and nobody is saying this was credible. Which way does the international, where do we stand if you look at the international community as far as the elections in Uganda are concerned?
Well, certainly there have been a variety of reports coming from the many delegations of electoral observers that were in Uganda. I think that most, if not all, of these reports have pointed out serious deficiencies. It is not clear yet how this will impact the international community's policy towards Uganda. Uganda, as you know, has a highly interventionist foreign policy and is very active in the region. They have been active in Somalia for years. The UPDF, the Ugandan Armed Forces, have formed the largest contingent of peacekeepers there. They were active in South Sudan during the civil conflict and certainly in other countries. Museveni has acted as somewhat of an elder statesman in East Africa over the past few years, over the past several years, decades even. He has led the drive to integrate East Africa through the East African community. He's been called on to mediate at different points, including being called on to be involved in the Burundi issue. And so I think it will be interesting to see whether the recent acts of repression and the challenges around this election will impact his legitimacy as a leader in East Africa.
All right, let me take... Milton, let me take a short break and I'll come to you.
Sure.
You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, let's reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. And here's our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan. Our letter of the week comes from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia, Liberia. He writes, I would like to congratulate the people of Uganda for the peaceful polls, and I urge all Ugandans to accept the results for the sake of peace.
Ugandans should acknowledge that it is rare for an incumbent in Africa to lose elections, and now that the election is over, let us rally around the winner to move the country forward.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
And welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Esther Githui-Ewart, sitting in for Shaka Sali, coming to you live from Washington. And Mariama Diallo is off today, but we have some tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question, which asks, Yoweri Museveni was declared the winner in last week's Ugandan presidential election, but opposition candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye quickly rejected the announcement, and tensions continue in the country. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what do you think about Uganda's election results? And so that is one of the questions there. And we have a lot of feedback here. And we thank you all for using our social media platforms to communicate to us. Milton, you had something to say before we go to some of these tweets. Go ahead.
Yes, I think some of the issues we're discussing had been slightly mischaracterized in terms of General Museveni's interventionist policy. First of all, I think when the United States is looking at its relations with Uganda, however favorable it is to have Ugandan troops stationed in Somalia, the U.S. should remember that those are not Mr. Museveni's private army. It belongs to the people of Uganda, the citizens of Uganda. So that should not be the only condition by which we base relations with Uganda. Because that same policy could continue under a different administration that does not happen to be under General Museveni. And then very briefly, but critically, in terms of the impact of his interventionist policy, let's not forget that it's because of the multiple invasions of the Democratic Republic of the Congo that an estimated 6 to 7 million Congolese have died. And in fact, in 2005, the International Court of Justice ruled against Uganda and ordered Uganda to pay reparations of $10 billion. Not a dime has been paid. But even much more important, and this one is not ever covered, but I think it's critical, the Wall Street Journal reported on June 8, 2006, that the International Criminal Court started a criminal investigation into the alleged crimes by Uganda in the Congo, which means potentially General Museveni could be indicted, just like Omar Bashir in the Sudan. And I think, and anybody can go and look at that story, they can research it. I think General Museveni is concerned, and I think that's one of the reasons why he continues clinging on to power. He thinks by being president, that's the only way he can guarantee his own protection against prosecution.
All right, Milton, I'll get back to you shortly and to our guests here in the studio. But thank you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we're tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Uganda Elections. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Let's go to a tweet from Habatin Kula, who tweets, I believe something stolen isn't worthy to celebrate compared to a genuine win. The Electoral Commission decided this was not a decision of the Ugandans. Also, we have another tweet from Abele Libariki, who writes, Museveni rigging during the election was not enough. Please stop humiliating your citizens. And our last tweet is from Cedrisa, who tweets, instead of civilians on the streets, now it's the police. And so, well, you can see what they're saying. And let's go to our Facebook as well. And we have a couple of email comments here. We begin with Fan Kajubi from Kampala, Uganda, who writes, this is the gravest miscarriage of democracy that Africa has seen. Come on, we have seen sham elections in Congo and a circus in Zimbabwe, but never a criminal hijack of the people's will such as has been done in Uganda in 2016. This will forever be an example of how arrogance, paranoia, and dementia can mix to deny a leader common sense. Wow, those are very tough words there, Rushdie, from Kajubi there in Uganda. What do you make about of all these, you know, the tweets and the Facebook comments? I haven't seen one that is really praising anything.
No, and I think this is a growing level of discontent across the African continent, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where people are no longer just happy with going through the motions of an election. They want elections to be credible. They realize that elections represent a key opportunity to engage and to hold politicians to account. And so even in countries like Nigeria in last year, where you saw the scourge of Boko Haram and the threat of it, people came out in droves to cast their votes, and every vote that was cast, there was a vote against the terror that was brought on by groups like Boko Haram. I mean, in Uganda today, despite the fact that we have a lot of criticism as to what has happened, you saw in the election, I mean, a 63% voter turnout that was last seen in 2006. Today on the elections, people are saying low voter turnout. The ability to actually take to social media nowadays sees a prerogative of ordinary citizens where they can hold people through account through public commentary. I mean, it is power in your hand nowadays. And whereas previously it was only through the ballot, people are expressing their levels of frustration with organized politics across the entire subcontinent.
You know, Milton, Elizabeth did raise a very good point, and I know you may disagree with this, but what we saw in Uganda years ago, the days of Idi Amin Dada and others, was really chaotic. A lot of people dying, bodies in even freezers and all that. Surely there must have been a number of people, and quite a number of people, who supported President Yoweri Museveni on this election.
Absolutely.
And who credit him with the stability that we see in Uganda. And even in the region of East Africa. And she clearly pointed that out. Remember also, you know, that Uganda has contributed quite some troops within the AU. I know, but I'm trying to tell you,
I did not disagree with good all and bad. Of it. I did not disagree with all of it. Mm-hmm. I said I disagree with some of it. Mm-hmm. I think that credit that he was deserving of, I think eventually it started to dissipate when he started to show another part of his character. Look, Amama Mbabazi, his former prime minister, now refers to him as a dictator. And Amama Mbabazi said he actually became dictatorial a long time ago, but in the interest of stability, he didn't want to rock the boat and make things any worse. He said that's why he stayed longer. But look, we can't discount the deaths attributed to the Ugandan intervention in the Congo. We can't discount the deaths attributed to the Ugandan intervention in South Sudan. In fact, Human Rights Watch reported that Uganda used banned cluster bombs in South Sudan. If the United States did not have a special relationship with Uganda, there's no way would an army be allowed to use cluster bombs and not take the matter to the Security Council. So all I'm saying is that the special relationship with Museveni has been too costly, not only for Uganda, but for the region. People in South Sudan would agree with this. People in the Democratic Republic of Congo would agree with this. And even in the Central African Republic, there was an article in last year's in the Wall Street Journal, and people can look this up as well, saying Ugandan troops were looting diamonds and raping civilians in the Democratic, in the Central African Republic. But these are stories that people don't dwell on. People don't give it enough attention that it deserves. Yeah. Otherwise, if they knew the true nature of General Museveni, they would not be surprised by his conduct today.
You know, Milton and Elizabeth, I'll give you another chance. But again, you know, we have to have some credible report here. We have people can write stuff, and people do fell out as friends. Like you say, Amama Mbabazi and Museveni are no longer in good terms. Dr. Kizza Besigye was his personal physician. You know the history lately. But let me go to one more comment from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan, Chris Mugume from Kampala, Uganda. He writes, I think we should stop presidential elections since a lot of taxpayers' money is wasted. Museveni, Kigundu, Electoral Commission can't organize free and fair elections, and I call upon Parliament to revise our constitution to reduce the powers of dictator Museveni. Wow, this is another harsh one. And our last Facebook comment comes from Nasa Kirunda Menya in Kampala, Uganda, who writes, I am greatly disappointed in the way Mr. Museveni has imposed himself on us. After rigging his way to rule us for another 5 years, Dr. Besigye is the president-elect and is my leader. Mr. Museveni is my ruler. Now, let me turn to you, Elizabeth. I don't know what to say now. I just leave it to you. You have some burning...
So, absolutely. I think that the comments about Museveni's deep support in the rural regions are very interesting that my co-panelists have mentioned. I think that the discourse on Facebook highlights that Museveni is increasingly facing a problem in that much of his support that he has in the rural regions is based on those who remember the years of war that were so destructive and so bloody and are grateful to him for having brought peace. Now we have 70% of the country that was born after that. So they don't have those memories. They don't have that gratitude towards Museveni. So I think that it is possible that there will be dwindling support as the proportion of the population that did not experience those wars gets greater and greater. And just to turn for one more moment to Milton's comments on UPDF in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, that's absolutely true, and I think that's well documented. I certainly wasn't meaning to say that UPDF is perfectly behaved. I do think that it is undeniable that UPDF is recognized as UPDF and Uganda are recognized as being a regional force and somewhat of a heavyweight in the region. That doesn't mean that the behavior has always been perfect, but it means that it's something to contend with. We have to acknowledge that much of East Africa's policy revolves around Uganda as a leader, so I think that the international community will have to think about its posture towards Uganda and whether that would change at all in light of what's happened in these recent elections over the past several years as repression has increased. In past years, I think Museveni has deflected criticism of internal politics by citing himself as an important security partner in the region. And it will be interesting to see whether things change at all in the coming years.
Rushdie, let me turn to you. I haven't forgotten about you. You're right next to me. Weigh in on this.
I think maybe to talk slightly differently, mention has been made about the use of international audits when it comes to elections. And Afghanistan has been cited. There have been a few other places like Haiti, Kosovo, and Iraq where international audits have been used. And I think it's really imperative that one needs to look at the different contexts. In the Ugandan context, the leader of the opposition is still willing to actually lay a petition and use the court system to pursue that while at the same time calling for an international audit. International audit has not yet been done on the African continent, and this would set a precedent for that. When it comes to issues of international audits, one has to look at the situation where you're saying, who is the proper authority to conduct this audit? Is it the UN that needs to come in? The UN Secretary General is currently in Burundi, busy with discussions there. It would be interesting to see what the perspective of the UN is on this. But I think definitely when it comes to issues of international audits, they are not panaceas. They need to be treated quite carefully. People need to agree on the rules and the standards associated with these kinds of audits. And they should be a gesture to create stability, but I think in the Ugandan context, you are talking about pressures on constitutional reforms and pressures to reform the institutions like the Election Commission, and these need to be addressed in tandem as well.
All right, well...
Two quick points.
Okay.
Very two quick points. I think Ugandans would rather take their chances with an international independent audit than with Badru Kigundu and Yoweri Museveni. So that's how I would respond to that question.
Milton, we still have
Ugandans would be much more happy to take that chance.
We have a lot of time to discuss a few more of this election in Uganda and all the upheaval that we're seeing now. Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at @VOAShaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app And now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about the beauty of Africa. From breathtaking vistas of the continent to its music, cuisine, and rich culture. Join guest host Esther Gidhui Ewart, a panel of guests, and myself as we discuss the beauty of Africa. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
That's election. And with my guests here in the studio, we have Elizabeth Murray, a senior program officer at the United States Institute of Peace, Rushdie Nakadin, regional director for Africa at the International Foundation for Electoral Systems, and in our New York studios is Milton Alimadi, publisher and CEO at Black Star News. Milton, you're burning with something to say, but let me give Elizabeth a chance here to make some comments. Elizabeth, you know, if you look at the whole region, we've had some stability and instability. If I remember, in 2008, there were chaos in Kenya's election, which led to the ICC cases, and you know, the rest of the history goes. But I'm also wondering, when you look at social media, because what we're getting is most of the people who are in the rural areas, and like you said, a lot of the population now are mainly the youth. They are media savvy, they are social media savvy, they can write. How about the people in the rural areas whom we understand are the ones who really supported President Museveni? Probably because they are not able to use the social media tools, that's why we are not getting comments. I don't know what you think about this, but there could be quite a lot of people who feel, well, he has led the country to stability in the last 28 years. Why not give him another 5 years?
Yeah, I believe that there certainly are. There are many that are ready for change, and there are certainly many supporters of Museveni. These individuals are, as you say, based in rural regions. They may not be using social media as much. The primary form of news for them could be radio and in other languages than English. And so I think that yes, the social media picture that we see tends to favor the youth voices. And that's the case everywhere, though. It seems that more and more youth are using social media to express their frustration and their grievances after the election. But as you and I were mentioning before, social media has been a powerful tool for organizing people for peace before this election, after the election. And this, we've seen this in other countries as well.
Rushdie. Milton, let me get a view from Rushdie here in the studio, and I'll give you a longer time to tell us what your thoughts are. But I'm wondering,
time is fine.
Yeah, when you look at the UN and the US and also the EU and all the other international bodies that are kind of critical about the outcome of this election and how the process was conducted, is there a fear to say it like it is? This was not credible. You probably need to go back to the polls. And on the other hand, Africans will tell you they are tired of being told what to do.
Yeah.
They don't want neocolonialism. Weigh in on this.
I think that there's been a change over the years. And though you might still have the sentiment that there should be African solutions for African problems, there's also a recognition that there are international standards at play, international obligations. We've seen a professionalization when it comes to election management, which is why we're able to criticize what is happening on the ground, because we have a sense of what those best practices or standards are. But by the same token, you've also seen that on the side of election observation. Over the past 20 years, people no longer conduct observation missions where they anecdotally speak about what they saw. They now cite law, they now cite provisions, and in particular within the African context, the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance plays a critical role. You've maybe seen institutions like the EU or the Commonwealth Secretariat or organization like ISA come out and be very critical. But when you go and read the statements of the African Union as well and their observer missions, it is equally critical, but maybe said in a slightly different way. So that acceptance of the norm of observation by virtue of the fact that people were invited to come and observe, there should be an acceptance that they might be critical. Observers are not just there to tick a box and say, good election. Let's everything continue. What you see now has been borne out in a lot of research. The fact that election observation reports correlate with citizens' comments and sentiments is a very strong point to be made. So there's focus now on some organizations, and it is easy to dismiss them and saying that they are coming from the West. But that is the norm nowadays, and we can accept that for countries like Nigeria. Ghana is an upcoming election. It is commonplace for organizations, whether they are from the West or from the African continent, to come in and provide some kind of, using election observation as a mechanism around accountability, to make a pronouncement about what is happening. I mean, Ugandan election observers will travel to Kenya for their elections. They will travel to other areas. That travel may be under the umbrella of the East African Community or IGAD or the African Union. But they go and observe elections everywhere.
Yes.
You might say, oh, well, the Commonwealth Secretariat has criticized, but the Commonwealth Secretariat was led by a former Nigerian president, and that should be acknowledged. There's a strong statement that was made there, and it's not just a thing of outsiders coming in to criticize, but there's a genuine need for professional commentary, which is what election observation is today.
Milton, I see you're burning with yes, 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 but I also want to know, where is the rest of the opposition when Besigye is being arrested in the house, in and out? Because in other countries, you see, when things don't go the way they're expecting, some of the opposition members will join forces and say, this is how we feel. We do not see that support. We see the people talking, unless I'm mistaken. Yeah. What's your view on that?
Mbabazi has condemned the election, has not recognized it, and I understand they're trying to work together, but he's also under house arrest. Sorry, when you have troops deployed all over the city, I think it pretty much affects all the citizens, certainly all the residents of Kampala. I wanted to agree with Rushdie in terms of the role of the international organizations. And this is the sad part about it. General Museveni really knows how to play the neocolonial card or even the race card sometimes. He's the one that invited the EU and the Commonwealth. And now that they say stuff he doesn't like, suddenly they're outsiders. One good thing about General Obasanjo, former President Obasanjo, he said before the election that he would not endorse a fraudulent election. And it turns out he's lived up to his promise. And then finally, I want to make a few points about the rural folks. Rural people know how to use smartphones. That's how they get money sent to them from all over the world. So it's not possible to believe that they know how to use the phone to receive money and not know how to use the same phone to send out their sentiments. So I think a lot of these critical comments are also coming from rural people. And then another myth, that Museveni has widespread support in the rural countryside. I don't think that's true. We saw the massive turnout at Besigye's campaigns in the city as well as in the villages. So I think that myth needs to also be put to rest.
Even as you say, Milton, that Amama Mbabazi has come out to say what happened in the election is not right, we do not hear the opposition clearly saying we stand with Besigye on this, or we don't see them saying we're going to form a united front. But then on the other hand, you ask yourself, what is more important, the stability and the peace and the safety of people in Uganda to say, forget about it, we'll have to deal with this for the next 5 years and realign ourselves for the next election, or go out on the street and then we have another chaotic situation? Let me turn to Elizabeth. Esther, you're the one from the U.S. Institute of Peace. What do you think?
What do I think people should do, or what do I think we should
expect? What should be the way forward now? Because, you know, more chaos, well, national security, the uniformed police everywhere,
It's very difficult.
Life is at stake here.
As a Ugandan citizen, I would be afraid to take to the streets. We have seen that Museveni, the NRM, and the government, which, as Milton points out, are increasingly fused, are ready and willing to use repression. We saw people killed in the lead-up. We saw ample use of tear gas. Many people are calling for dialogue between Besigye and Museveni. Unfortunately, I don't know that Museveni has incentives to come to the table right now. So I believe that it's a really, really difficult situation. And as a Ugandan citizen, I certainly wouldn't be venturing into the streets right now. Those that are doing so are brave, but there are reasons to think that they would be in serious danger.
Rushdie, one of the Facebook comments, the suggestion was that they go back to Parliament and have a kind of amendment to the Constitution that allows, actually reduces the power of the presidency. Do you think that would probably happen, given that Elizabeth was telling us about the two acts of Parliament? That really didn't seem to augur well with some of the comments we are seeing from social media. I'm not sure, and I know Milton can tell us how the opposition is in Parliament and when all these acts, the votes in Parliament have been conducted and which way they have leaned, whether it's pro-government or the way that the people would expect. What do you think? Do you think the constitution change would probably help to keep the Uganda stable?
Well, I think the one thing that needs to be pointed out is that in most cases where there have been constitutional changes on the African continent, they have been ushered in by a political crisis of some kind. That is a given, and it is known through a lot of the work that many researchers have done. So to argue that that is going to be a simple process when you have a ruling party potentially dominating parliament, I think, is a hard ask. When one looks at some of the constitutional calls for reform associated with the electoral process, I mean, that has been ongoing since 2013. And we've seen the roadmap being published for this election, but issues around electoral reform have still been pending in parliament. So to be able to push constitutional change, I think, is going to require far more than just relying on a parliamentary process for it to actually take place.
30 seconds for you, Elizabeth. 2016, we have a couple of elections coming up in Africa. How should they prepare? And especially when you look at this conflict and leaders extending their terms, maneuvering the constitution and using referendums.
Yeah, we certainly, many elections in Africa are coming up this year. As you pointed out, many have been peaceful. We have many elections that we look at as great successes. I think we'll see increasing involvement of youth. Youth have been called a threat to electoral stability, but they're also a tremendous asset. So I would say it's important to watch the potential of youth for violence or for peace, and to keep an eye to these constitutional changes that have happened in many countries recently, including Rwanda and Republic of the Congo, that allow leaders to stay in place longer.
Okay, Milton, you have the last word. 30 seconds.
Well, yeah, I believe that, as many Ugandans have indicated, Dr. Kizza Besigye is the president-elect, but he should give incumbent General Museveni an opportunity for an audit of these elections.
And which way forward? Stability, peace, and say if you can't beat them, join them?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think Ugandans have demonstrated by voting that they want peace, stability, and democracy at the same time. And certainly an end to one-man rule after 30 years.
Well, we hope for the best for Uganda, the Pearl of Africa. And on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Elizabeth Murray, a senior program officer at the United States Institute of Peace, and Rushdie Nakadin, regional director for Africa at the International Foundation for Electoral Systems. In our New York studios is Milton Alimadi, publisher and CEO at the Black Star News. And thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. And for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Buddy. Thank you for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa, and good night from Washington. Thank you.